Lights, camera, action.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Movie Madness in association with Spitballing Pod. I'm Luke Byron, joined this week by returning Keenan Bonner. This week, we're going to be getting into 1996's Swingers.
Critics say Swingers is the most fun you'll have at the movies this holiday season.
I don't want you to be the guy in the PG-13 movie everyone's really hoping makes it happen. I want you to be like the guy in the rated R movie.
Entertainment Weekly calls it a terrific new comedy. It's so exhilarating and makes you want to applaud. It's hugely original and laugh out loud funny.
Baby, you are so money and you don't even know it.
It's the year's most winning comedy.
So how long do I wait to call?
2 days is like industry standard.
Swingers, rated R.
Well, how long are you guys going to wait? 6 days.
Now playing select cities.
Keenan, how are we doing today?
Yeah, very well, mate. Thank you. And yourself?
Not bad. I've just in the last moments backed out of chucking in some kind of money reference because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of those. Hesitated with Keenan Baby Bonner. Wasn't sure you'd appreciate that.
And I'm not sure you can pull it off is the main, my main issue.
We'll touch on that because something I will ask you is... If you found yourself resonating with one character in this film more than any others, who would it be? But I'll leave the audience on edge on that until we get to the conclusion of the episode.
Okay.
A wannabe actor has a hard time moving on from a breakup, but he is lucky to have supportive friends. What do you think the critics thought of this?
I thought I knew the answer, but I'm pretty sure they loved it.
Once it got out there, that does seem to be the case.
Yeah.
Here is pure exuberance without all that messy, nostalgic yearning. Here is a movie unafraid to come right out and showcase the sheer idiot joy involved in being a boy among boys. Swingers doesn't really add up to much except a good time. It's smart, funny, and cute. With all that going for you, who needs to be money? Blessed with a brilliantly quotable screenplay, one of the most electric and insightful ever written. Rarely has the American male been portrayed more accurately or with funnier results. A guy film that gives you something to latch onto that makes male bonding both believable and appealing. And it was a movie about feelings for guys learning to be men. So... We were around when this came out. I can only speak for myself. I don't know if you were tuning in for this quite at 2 years old.
An interesting
at that stage.
An interesting point. The day on which Mike is due to phone Lorraine would have been my second birthday.
Well, there we go. I do believe it was you that recommended this to me.
Yes.
And so you've been away a while. We won't get into the why of that now.
Okay.
This is a film that you've been asking to do for quite literally years. I think it was in the mentioning for Movie Madness 100, fell just short because of Batman and Robin.
You can see
some competition.
We were going to do this for 100, but as with so many things, I gave in to your demands.
And then 150, we did American Pie 1, 2, 3 instead. Yeah. You've obviously had plenty of time to think. I'll ask you the question that you've fallen short on a couple of times for films that I think you like even more than this. What do you love about this film?
Vegas, baby. That's it. Love scenes in Vegas. Love films in Vegas. Love a diner scene, of which there are four in this. There's definitely three. Is there four?
Yeah, there's plenty.
Yeah, there's four good diner scenes. One of the reviews that might start by saying one of the reviews and then cobbled together two or three of them here, but the reviews of it is basically just what it's like to be like. Change the dialogue, change the speech patterns, but most of the film is basically just what it's like to be young to mid 20s and just be out with your mates.
Yeah. Well, I said to TK in the week, because I said I was doing this, and I said we thought about doing this a couple of times, and I've always been unsure of it. And he asked why, and I said, well, it's one of them. And I felt the same when we did Air last week, actually.
It's a film where nothing happens.
Well, I thought it's like there's so much I like about it, but it's like a feeling. It wasn't something that I could necessarily put into words.
Can I just stop you?
Go on.
Because I've tried to explain that exact phenomenon to you before, but about things that I don't like, and you've never taken it.
Well,
in fact, I have
followed up with words is probably what my argument would be there.
Not yet, you haven't. I'm just saying.
That's coming. I wanted to give you the floor first.
Okay, right, that's fine. I was going to say, it's almost led to my somewhat acrimonious departure, no?
No. I think, and we did Primal Fear 2 weeks ago, I think Primal Fear vs. Angels and Demons, the only ever vaulted podcast on this channel, was probably the beginning of the end. Hey, we're back here today. I've still got 3 slots open in October, so look.
What did you say, sorry, about Primal Fear?
Primal Fear, me and TK did it 2 weeks ago. Primal Fear versus Angels and Demons is the only ever vaulted podcast on this channel.
I can't remember why.
I think we did both films in 54 minutes.
Oh, what, you and I did?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
I wonder why. Why we weren't at it?
I don't know. But it's, yeah, the only one. And TK, turns out, it's one of his favourite ever films, so
that's
all
insane.
Works out for the best.
That's a dark psyche.
When I was putting into words what I like about this film, and you said about, you know, not a lot happening, I do love a good hangout movie, as they're known. Ferris Bueller is maybe a bit more of an upmarket version of this.
I think more happens in Ferris Bueller, though.
For sure, and the lead roles are probably inverted to what we get here. Fast Times, I really like. The best parts of Pulp Fiction, I would actually put in that conversation. The Breakfast Club. It's what I liked about Licorice Pizza. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't. I've never seen The Breakfast Club, and I've never seen Fast Times either.
Dazed and Confused is a classic. Once Upon a Time feels a bit like that for a lot of it. I think, well, Pulp Fiction, the action in it is great, but the best times I have in there are when we're hanging around with Samuel L. Jackson, John Travolta, and then John Travolta and Uma Thurman.
I do think Air is a very good, just comparison to the things I've seen recently, because I tried to describe Air as a film where there's no great dramatic sequence. Nothing really happens. It's just giving good people good roles and letting them have a good time.
Yeah, people talk about it there being a whole kind of subgenre just titled Men in Meetings. And that fits
the worst
in there
part,
quite well.
I was going to say, the worst part about that is I can run him through my head that I know there's a lot of those films I absolutely adore.
So you need to see eventually. You'll enjoy Blackberry.
It's the Taron Egerton. No, it's not. It's Jay Baruchel, right?
That was Tetris. Yeah, it's Jay Baruchel, yeah.
Yeah.
Moneyball is one I'd like to do on here since I watched it for the first time, and that's one and the same.
If you depending on how today goes, if you wish to invite me back, we can always do Moneyball. I love Moneyball.
I mean, there's quite a few, because one I'm about to reference, which another one you recommended, which maybe I'm pushing it out a bit, but Chef feels a lot like that as well. Like, we're basically just sat there with him, his son, March Nemesis, John Leguizamo, and we're just watching them just cook up a bit of grub.
I tell you what, come to Brockworth. If I come to your side of the world, we'll do a chef. We can do a chef watch along.
We'll just do just bang out like it's a day shift. We just stack up all these films and just smash them out.
It's actually not a bad idea, by the way.
No, the other thing with this film, the quotables are insane.
Yeah.
Not to get too into the best quotes just yet.
No.
But the second I heard Trent say, "I'm going to find 2 waitresses and pull me a Fredo," I had to pause it, because it was just, I'd forgotten that entirely. Unbelievable. I was just right back in again.
This place is fucking dead.
You know, I'm going to find me 2 waitresses here and I'm going to pull me a Fredo.
Yeah, well, they're all skanks.
What are you talking about? Look at all the beautiful babies here.
The beautiful babies don't work midnights to six on a Wednesday. This is the skank shift.
Look at all the beautiful honeys here.
Excuse me,
darling. I'm sorry. Wow. I want you to remember this face here, okay? This is the guy behind the guy behind the guy.
Okay. You cut that shit out.
That actually reminded me of you.
It's so good. And something that's interesting, and we're obviously going to end by talking about the ending. I actually read the film differently when I've rewatched it since I spoke to you about the ending the first time I saw it. And I believe you and TK said, you know, that's not how I see the ending. And so I went back in and I saw it completely differently this time around. So I don't know what space I was in the first time I watched it.
I can't remember your take the first time around. We can do it later.
Yeah, well, the first time around, and we won't go into it completely now.
Yeah.
I thought that Mikey almost pitied Trent by the end of it, and he thought he was now above that.
Yeah, I can see how you get there.
And on the next couple of viewings, I think I've seen it three, maybe four times now, I thought it was as much about, you know, everyone's up sometimes, everyone's down sometimes. It's not to say that his method is better than his method and different people. And that was how I took it because I don't think it's supposed to be negative towards Trent in that way. So that's not how I took it the second time, but maybe I just like Trent more now.
Possibly.
You mentioned Vegas. We'll start with Vegas, baby, Vegas. And Dean Martin kicks us off. Always good when we can reference things like this, but we got to speak to JB Rogers and Steve Pink, two films where the soundtrack is so important. It's Hot Tub Time Machine and the American Pie franchise.
Yeah.
And American Pie was very unique in that by the second film, the soundtrack had been so important to the first one that people were actually sending them songs to put in their film.
Yeah.
But we heard about just the amount of money that went on Hot Tub Time Machine. Won't go through the whole making of this film. The film cost $239,000 was how much Doug Liman said he could get it done for at its cheapest. It cost $249,000. When this finally went out to be released, they spent $500,000 just on Dean Martin to kick the film off. And those things pay off. I've heard it on countless podcasts before. If you've got like a small indie film, don't spend your money on like anything else other than the soundtrack. Because if you just get one iconic moment,
yep,
you're done.
It's the Tarantino thing, right? That's his thing. That's what he always said.
Yeah, there's one I saw.
I doubt it. He's obviously not the first to do it, but
yeah, I get what you're saying. Cruel Intentions popped up on the rewatchables. I've not listened to it, but at the end of that, I think it's a Blur track they do as kind of the key moment of the end. And that's another one that's like really iconic when it plays out.
Yeah.
The scene where Mike talks to his answering machine, not a great fan of that. That was supposed to be a running joke throughout the film. He was going to keep kind of checking back in, and his answer phone was going to be like the one person that he could properly tell his true feelings to. They just cut all the rest of them in editing, but they left this one in bizarrely.
Do you think you would have enjoyed it more if it becomes a running joke rather than a one-off?
I'd prefer to just get it out of the way because it doesn't really make any sense. It's kind of the whole film is supposed to be as grounded and realistic as possible. And then we've just got, I think there's like three moments maybe in the film that are separate from that.
Okay, if that's one, what are your other two?
I think is there not a moment where he sees someone as a bunny?
Yes.
There's like a double take. And I'll have to think of what the other one is. I do have it written down somewhere. There's a couple of, those were the real couple. But
the rabbit thing is weird, I will grant you that.
Yeah.
But it's so brief that it doesn't
bother me.
Do you know what I mean? If that's a 3 minute scene, then yes, cut it. But it is very brief.
I think, and I referenced the Fredo line there, the moment that I knew I was going to like this film is, I mean, it's Vince Vaughn at the start, but him saying they're going to give Daddy the Rain Man suite, you dig that? Do you think we'll be there by midnight? We're going to be up 500 by midnight is just perfect. And then them singing Vegas Baby Vegas as they get dialed in for that drive.
Yeah. Yeah, as they come towards Vegas, I mean, you sort of get into it. They talk about what are we wearing. I need you in a suit. Where's your suit? Get your suit on. Them in the old, it looks like an old Cadillac. I'm a big fan of that. It's just easy going for the, I mean, it's easy going for out, but the first 20 is just smooth, isn't it?
Yeah, I can identify with Mikey as well, because he's got this image in his head of how everything has to be perfect. At a point he's saying, just turn around, we're going to go home, because yeah. Trent doesn't want to have his suit on before they turn up.
Which, by the way, it's the right play from Trent.
Yeah, get it on the last minute. Yeah, it's like T-shirt time in Jersey Shore. Don't need to be sweating in the car in a full suit.
Correct.
Don't know who Mikey thinks is going to be spotting them on the way in.
Yeah, you don't want to get there and you suddenly jackets crease the shit because you've been sat in a car for 4 hours.
If anything, pull into one of them lay-bys that they pull into when they've been in that girl's trailer. Quickly get changed there. Right outside.
Me and some of the lads did it before. We were going racing, didn't want to wear the suits down. Four or five of us just got changed in one of the dingiest car parks you'll ever see.
This
not a proud moment.
I don't know how I've never been to a casino.
That is not something I don't think you've ever told me that, and that shocks me.
Yeah, I've never been to a casino. The people that would want to go, I would say it's too dangerous to go with them, so I'd rather keep them away.
But I love casinos, so I'm not sure what you're trying to tell me.
No, I mean, I won't name them on here, but there are a couple of people that, if they aren't addicts, they have addictive tendencies, and I don't need to be reeled in with their downfall, so I'd have to steer clear of them. I think I have hinted to Rory before when he said he was going, but the hint wasn't taken on board, so I've just left it.
Okay, yeah, no, I love going to casinos.
The fact that they're pumped for Vegas, you see the journey start, and then there's that lull where they're like, okay, we're actually further away than we think we were going to be. And then you get pumped back up when you're right by the destination. Did you ever drive to see any of your mates at uni for a night out? I know you didn't go to uni, but we went to a couple of different places for nights out down there, and the drive was always similar to that.
Yes, I did a couple of times.
I had a disaster while there, but we had a great one for Nottingham. Joe drove us down in the evening, and we went to Plymouth to see TK, which was good. Long old drive that.
Yeah.
And even I went to one in Worcester with Brad, where Sean went, and he picked me up from work at 10:30, got changed in the car, and we went immediately down there. Sean, I'm not sure he told us before that it was a foam party, which is never good. But a good night out nonetheless.
No, I've done that. It's like... I think it's just the same as any weekend away. Like, if you get a coach to somewhere because you're doing something, you're like, oh, right, the first hour is, like, great. And then you're like, hold on, we've got another 2.5 hours of this shit.
I'm led to believe that Vegas is like getting the coach to London as well. You know, you get the coach to London and you see that you're in London and you've still got, like, 45 minutes left until you get there.
Yeah.
But I imagine Vegas is far more appealing with that in the distance than...
I wonder how far away, I'm sure I could find this out. I wonder how far away, obviously I know it depends time of night and stuff, but I wonder how many miles out you are before you start getting a real glimpse of it.
I imagine when you're properly looking out for it the first time, it's probably further away, but yeah, I've no real insight on that.
So, because some of, like, think about some of the size of some of those casinos and they are all lit up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it must be a fair distance.
I'm also getting the urge to watch Casino this evening now.
It's back on Prime.
Yeah, I did see. In here, you've got them trying to be cool, going over to the high rollers table with the twins in the red dresses, always double down on 11. It's just shooting 100% here. I couldn't believe, I looked at when they leave the trailer. It feels like we've been watching for like 10 minutes, and it's like it's a third of the film gone. But that first third is just unbelievable, and it's just 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it really is.
If I'd lost $200 and Trent's picking my arm in the air saying, who's a big winner? Mikey's a big winner. I would be as livid as he is.
Yeah. Played out really well by both characters.
It's hard to...
It's one of those things...
This could have been anyone else.
It's one of that bit from Trent. That's when you know you... That's those moments that make you think you probably need him around.
When you see him in action for the first time, if you tell the bartender to go easy on the water, this 50 cent piece has your name written all over it. I'm going to be timing you. 1, 2. And then I can appreciate Mikey's disgust and him saying, you know, she was smiling at how money I was. Why would she want to get out of here? The honey baby's bringing us a cocktail now. Can babies fly in 2023?
Can babies?
As in, if you were having a conversation with...
Yeah, no, I got that part. Yeah, I didn't think we were asking whether I can...
Yeah, if you tried to sneak into conversation, you see that baby over there?
Yes.
Is there anyone you could say that to where they would just let it slide?
I mean, it's not quite the same, but I called someone babe today.
Honey baby, do you think you can push it that far?
I think people can. I don't think I can.
Yeah. Vince, I can't imagine seeing this for the first time and having never seen him before.
Sorry, say that again.
I can't imagine seeing this film having never seen Vince Vaughn before.
What this being?
How you would just take this energy, like, she likes you and daddy's going to get her to bring a friend, one of her beautiful baby friends, and he's just on full power from the second he's on screen. And you'd just be, who the hell is this guy? For all the right reasons, but we've got the context of Vince Vaughn going into this.
Yeah, I suppose it does make a massive difference to my appreciation for this film, because I'm not actually sure that if this was my first introduction to him, if I would be like as all in.
I don't know, but
which I know is odd, because I do adore this film, but like my first real introduction to Vince Vaughn was what I can tell you, it was Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, I don't know what mine would have been.
And from that moment, from then on, that was my guy. I hadn't seen Dodgeball at that point.
So
I hadn't seen Old School.
Dodgeball.
I hadn't seen either of those two. Wedding Crashers was... it was a pirated DVD, which takes us back in time a little bit now. But yeah, that was... So mine was all in. And I'm not sure really... I don't think really there's a film of his that I dislike that I've seen.
Yeah, we've got a whole section on him in a minute because I feel like when I watch his films, it's like they've been made just for me, you and TK. That's how I feel when I watch them. It's like that's in the back of his mind when he's putting these together. Because some of this is just so tailor-made.
Hmm.
When she agrees to meet them at the Bamboo Lounge is so good. Like, you know it's coming, but it's still great. Mikey saying it's a Jell-O mind trick. Them going for breakfast and him making the Age of Enlightenment joke. They're calling him Voltaire.
I love that scene, by the way.
Did make me crave some pancakes as well.
I'm not a lover.
I think I've only had proper like that once, and it was in the airport before going to, I think it was like Marseille. So
I imagine... That's going to be a bad example of that, though.
Yeah, for sure. My point is, I can only imagine what this would be like in a greasy American diner.
Yeah, they don't do a lot for me.
And Mikey is very early on, they do well to make us quite so aware as to how much of a loser he is.
Yeah.
When he says, we're not in Kansas anymore, to the girl dressed as Dorothy, I love things like that where I physically have to turn away from the screen.
I feel like, and this is no disrespect to you, but I feel like that's in your locker.
I love his quiche joke to Lorraine at the end of the film.
I adore it. I love the backtrack when he's like, no, I like quiche.
Yeah. But even when he backs up the Dorothy joke, doesn't he, by saying, yeah, I'm a comedian, and then they laugh at that instead.
Yeah. The booking agent, where he's like, there's not a bloke alive who hasn't, I'm fairly confident in this, you haven't tried to give it a bit of chat and it backfires immediately. One question and you are done.
Just the polar opposites of them. Trent getting lucky when they're in the trailer. Mikey knowing the words to his story is great because Trent is absolutely that guy who's recycled this three, four, five times.
Yeah.
And the shot of him thinking that, he stops necking the girl to say, I got to check on my boy.
Yeah.
Thinks he's got what he wants to see. And we've been together for 6 years and I'm just still not over it. So good.
Yeah. Vince Vaughn's face for that minute whilst the two women are like, oh my God, how sweet is he? Just, it's a mixture of rage and dread.
And I mean, there might be as many quotables in this first 30 as there are in the rest of the film.
Very Trent, possibly.
When he's giving the pep talk in the car, you take yourself out of the game, you start talking about puppy dogs and ice cream, and of course it's going to end up on the friendship tip. And that's when he tells him on the way out of Vegas, baby, you're so money and you don't even know it. Incredible.
I just need you to tell me that like once a week.
I wrote down in my notes, I need that Trent energy just behind me.
Yeah.
Reaffirming me throughout my days. Vince, there couldn't be anyone more perfect for this role. And hearing that he was the last person cast is crazy. So I got some insight into how they got this made. Favreau, I'll talk about later, writes the script in 10 days. At that point, he just wants to sell it. But as the offers start coming in, I think he's got some attachment to it. He doesn't want to give it into the wrong hands. People want to change too much of it. People wanted to replace the character of Trent and make it a girl, make it a woman in the film, which makes no sense. The first person they sent it to sent a note back. They wanted to just eradicate Vegas from the script. And he said the more he saw that, he just couldn't stand seeing other people do it. And so the way they went about trying to sell it, him and his friends, they would meet financiers and they would essentially perform the script at like a table read setting. So they would act this out for an hour and whatever. So people would love it, but they would never put the money behind it. The first studio that was going to wanted to put Johnny Depp in the main role. Eventually, Vince just stopped reading it because he said he realized that was going to be the role they needed to cast a star in.
Yeah.
They can't find anyone for that long. And Favreau says, the worst thing you can tell like a director coming on board is, I know a guy, because they just assume they're going to be shit.
Yeah.
Vince eventually gets him in the room and obviously the rest is history. Maybe the toughest question I'll ask you today, what are your top three Vince performances in order?
Oh, in order?
In order.
Oh.
While you're thinking, I've gone Jeremy in Wedding Crashers, Trent in Swingers, Peter LaFleur in Dodgeball, and there's still some horrible ones missed out there.
Jeremy in Wedding Crashers is number one. Trent at two. Maybe a curveball, but just because I remember walking out of the cinema, and even though it's a small part, he was essentially all I talked about.
I think I know where we're going.
It's him in Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, I had that down as well. I mean, old school.
Old school would be my 4/3. I could move those two, but this and Wedding Crashers would be my top two.
I know
the internship. Yeah,
I know you're not a Christmas guy. In fact,
you love Four Christmases, all right?
So I do like Four Christmases, and even if I could just get you like a compilation of just all of his lines, he's just got so many like Vince-isms. There's a point where I think I may even have sent you the clip before where Reese Witherspoon's character says to him, I just want to know that if we were on a plane and the plane was going down, that you would buckle up by seatbelt before your own. And he's like, well, I wouldn't. And the TSA wouldn't want me to either. And the way it's delivered, you can imagine just the whole film. If there's him in a nativity that he's acting out in there, it's just so good. And then the ending of the film is...
Have you ever seen the breakup with him and Aniston?
So I haven't, and I've seen one clip from it, really, that I enjoyed so much that I know the film can't be as good as that. The clip is him playing Madden with a kid online, and then her date comes in and he starts playing Madden with her date.
Yeah.
Jennifer Aniston is just outrageous.
Yeah.
He jumps in on the Mr. and Mrs. Smith rebound.
Correct.
Brawling Cell Block 99. Not sure if it's quite your bag, but an enjoyable watch. Anchorman, Mr. Wesley Mantooth.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever watch The Watch?
With him still a rich Ioane?
Yeah.
I did. I saw it in the cinema.
And Jonah Hill.
Yeah, I saw it in the cinema.
Yeah. I'm scared to rewatch that because I think it's not going to have aged how I like it to. But me, Sean, TK, a couple of others, we all watched it in the cinema. Loved it after that.
Exact same. I've never rewatched it. And I feel like it's been forgotten.
Every time we went on like a journey together, you'd get You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. We would stick on.
Great song. The security guard strolling doing Eazy-E is superb.
Yeah. I know I'll laugh at it, but I just cherish the memories of watching that back in 2012.
Yeah, I think it's one of them that's just forgotten, and it's a shame because I don't know if it holds up or if it's any good, but I remember watching it and being like, yep, this is sick.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked at the co-op and you used to basically get vouchers for Christmas or like long serving or whatever.
Yeah.
And people used to waste theirs on food, and I always felt I wanted something to kind of show for it. And I used to just buy up as many DVDs as I could.
Mm.
And so I remember getting The Watch one year. And yeah, I'm still annoyed I got rid of all my DVDs, but we've had that conversation before.
I think there will come a time in my life where I do start to collect them again.
Yeah, I need a DVD player first is my main. But I want to get a Blu-ray player. So a couple of hurdles there. Maybe a good time to plug what we have. We mentioned Movie Madness 100 and 150. You are making a trip to sunny Brockworth for Movie Madness 200. We mentioned Old School there. We're doing our first movie draft with our own little twist on it. And so it's going to be the ultimate side character draft, a pod that prides themselves on appreciating side characters more than any other that I've listened to. Chaz could be in the mix. Wesley Mantooth could be in the mix. Your man from Hacksaw Ridge could be in the mix. Who knows? Vince might be on your board at the end of it.
It could be.
Maybe if I redo that and you sound a bit more enthusiastic.
Oh, sorry. It's fine. I just got lost. I got lost. You started talking about who I was going to pick and then my mind wandered.
That might be the most I'm ever going to prep for a podcast, and I'm a man that preps for podcasts, but
you are a man who pods for prepcasts. I am not.
Well, I said to you when I saw you on Saturday that, you know, it's one you can just tap into your knowledge for, or you can do some significant prep, and you said at the time that you don't have knowledge to tap into, so
I don't remember. I don't remember that conversation.
might be a sign of how our weekend went.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was going to say, if you're holding me to anything I said on Saturday night, then more fool you.
Saturday was the lesser of all evils, but your Saturday may have been different to mine.
Oh, it's all a blur, mate. That was no bueno.
Trent's cheat code saying, all I do is stare at their mouths and wrinkle my nose, and I just turn out to be a sweetheart.
Yeah. That is the staring at the mouth thing, just in general, because if you're far enough away, it looks like you're still looking someone in the eye. It's my trick on client calls at work. I'm not paying attention to what people are trying to tell me. So I just look at the mouth of whoever's speaking.
The occasional people that just dog you on YouTube for not paying enough attention in interviews.
Yeah, probably. My attention span.
Your dad coming in to ask what you wanted for tea, I think, during our chat with David Dobkin.
What are you going to do? Look, I can't shoo the man away. He's through the door before I know he's there. Is it worse that I mute myself and have said conversation, or if midway through an interview with David Dobkin, I scream, fuck off, Dad?
Well, unless he had meatloaf, then I think he'd appreciate it.
Yeah. On the other hand, I don't think I would have.
No. I think it was Bill Simmons that said, the best thing that happened to the career of Vince Vaughn was realizing that he should just play the guy that used to be Trent. And when I started applying that to his best roles, that does seem to fit in there fairly perfectly.
Yeah, my big shame is that he reached a point where, I don't know whether he reached it or someone reached it for him, that he decided he didn't want to be funny anymore, or didn't want to do comedies anymore.
Well, he tried it after this because he was worried that people were just going to cast him as Trent for the next however long.
I get that.
Yeah, and I think there's a thing, and we've spoken about this before, where comedy actors do get lumped in like it's the only thing they can do, and I think they take it as kind of an affront in a way, and they feel they need to prove themselves. I wouldn't have thought he was the type that felt they needed to do that.
No, I get it, and I think you're right. People don't want to get lumped in, because there's a thing about comedy not being like the lowest form of acting and stuff, but like, on a serious note, What's wrong with making people laugh? It's one of the best things. It's one of the best things you can do, is to make people laugh.
Than just reading a punchline, which
there's so much more to. There's so much more to it, and there's so much more skill, like movement, timing, just your own speech pattern, little affectations, depending on what it is. But there are a lot of Sean William Scott, same thing. Didn't want to get tight cast. I just think I don't know if you're good at something, just play to your strengths, because there's so much worse in life than being the guy that makes people laugh.
It's part of it that we don't really get films like what he would star in anymore.
Maybe, but I think he made that decision before the world.
Yeah, that's fair. It's just when I see, you won't have seen No Hard Feelings yet with Jennifer Aniston.
I haven't, no, you're right.
But 15 years ago, it wouldn't have been as big as it is now. But it's because we're just crying out for this type of film. And like 2005 to 2010 was the time where Vince would have been the guy that you just chuck into so many of these films. He doesn't seem to be a particular... I don't know what he's like with maybe the paparazzi over there. He doesn't seem to be a particularly popular celebrity, which for someone that's kind of speaks their mind, does all these kind of things, people usually lap that up, but he doesn't seem to go down that way in Hollywood.
But I think he's, I don't know, you can probably maybe tell me I'm wrong, but I feel like he's sort of shied away from a lot of limelight for a while, though.
Yeah, I imagine he got a taste of it with Jennifer Aniston and thought, I don't need that.
That's too much. There must have been a time where he couldn't walk down the street.
He's probably awful. More of a people's champ.
I'm not even sure he's the people's champ. I think he's just one of the boys. That's ultimately his appealing thing, is Vince Vaughn just strikes you as one of the boys. Now think about the roles that you like him in outside of Hacksaw Ridge and Brawling Cell Block 99. There aren't many where you'd be like, tell you what, I'd like love to have a beer with that bloke.
Yeah.
Even Wes Mantooth.
Absolutely.
whose ultimate crime is wanting to be the best person at his job and sticking up for his mum.
Yeah. It's weird seeing how slim and essentially good looking he is in this.
He looks fucking great.
He's a poster guy in this. They thought they couldn't market this film without someone they could stick on a poster. And it's weird looking at him in this film that they didn't feel he was a guy that you could stick on a poster.
Because... Yeah, it is. The other thing is, it's weird that, I mean, this is, yeah, just after Pulp Fiction, you've got Leslie Graham there, just put her on the poster.
Yeah, fair.
Do you know what I mean? She looks great. Just great 15 years later when we're watching Hangover, but she looks stunning in this. Just, let's be honest, if you're not sure what to put on the poster, put a pretty woman on the poster.
Yeah, but it works. So you can Google and you can see that eventually when this gets the big push in blockbusters and things like that, because I'm sure you've seen it, that's when it takes off.
Yeah.
They have the kind of cardboard cutouts with him holding a drink, and that's how they're billing it. So,
it works. But I said, I'm not criticizing. I actually like the film poster. It's just, if there is indecision, my tactic would be, let's find someone pretty.
Yeah, I thought the originality of his character in this is that he's kind of a not so smooth guy. There's like a level of sweetness to his character. He is still kind of telling people what they want to hear outside of Mikey a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But we do really get the sense that he does genuinely care about Mikey.
Yeah.
Like, it took them 3 films for them to tell us that Stifler cared about anyone in American Pie, and they're in the same kind of bracket of character. Vince Vaughn said he got a lot of pressure from the director to just play him as a romantic, and he said, I didn't want to do that. I felt if I made him goofy and nuts, but also made it clear that he's enjoying himself, people would ultimately like him. As long as he didn't have cruel ulterior motives, people would get on board.
That's the big thing.
Because there's only...
His ultimate motive is, my mate's having a rough time. Can I try and make it better? I know how to do this one way and one way only. There isn't an ulterior motive. Obviously, as soon as Mikey and your man have the falling out, he's like, no, don't fucking speak to me. Like, don't talk to me.
And that's Vince's idea. It was his idea to yell at Sue after he insults Mike. He says that was written in specifically at his request because he wanted to show that beneath the bravado, he did truly care for Mike as a friend.
Yeah, and it shines. It comes through massively there. I mean, like you say, he's ultimately just... Because obviously you find out that he's supposed to be 24 at the time when he's talking about the audition.
Yeah.
I've read certain things, people saying, oh, they thought he was a bit of an arsehole and stuff. Again, what's his ultimate crime? He doesn't find... He maybe... And I'm probably not the one to say it, but might be slightly disrespectful to a waitress, but he doesn't do anything.
He's got like 3 moments, I would say, when it can be taken a different way.
Yeah.
When he's jumping on the table at the end, when he rips up the number after he's just spent the time speaking to her, and when he's rude to the waitress at the start.
Rude to the waitress.
He makes up for that.
Resolves itself. Ripping at the number.
He says, you know, she's a nice girl, but not for me.
Yeah.
If anything, he's too nice. He's not leading her on.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. He doesn't not playing games. Fair enough at the end when he's bollock-eyed and he's giving that waitress a bit of shit. There's a real problem with the food service industry, apparently.
What was that, sorry?
So there's a real problem with the food service industry, apparently. That part's not ideal. Does give away a breakfast to someone, though.
Exactly. Hasn't even touched it.
No.
His pep talk to Mike about the bear and the bunny, Favreau claims, is a real pep talk that Vince gave him at that time in his life, and he immediately went home and wrote it down.
That's cool. Isn't Trent just like a mashup though of like their mates at the time and shit they say?
He says essentially all of the characters that people play aren't exactly them, but he's taken aspects of their personality and put it in to a time that he was going through. Not kind of cross cut in, but something he went through. He's taken the way he dealt with it with the people around him and written that into something that he thought other people could identify with.
It's a cool. The story behind it does help this.
Yeah, you're not hurting it. You're just kind of gently batting the bunny around. And the bunny's scared, Mike. The bunny's scared of you. It's shivering. Sue chipping in there as a two-punch. It's just so good.
She's just like this little bunny who's just kind of cowering in the corner.
Shivering?
Yeah, man, just kind of, you know, you got these claws and you're staring at these claws, man. And you're thinking to yourself with these claws, you're thinking, man, how am I supposed to kill this bunny?
And you're poking at it, man.
You're not hurting it. You're just kind of gently batting the bunny around. You know what I mean? And the bunny's scared, Mike. The bunny's scared of you.
And you got
shivering.
These fucking claws,
you got these fucking
fangs,
claws
and
these fangs, man. And you're looking at your claws and you're looking at your fangs. And you're thinking to yourself, I don't know what to do, man. I don't know how to kill the bunny. With this, you don't know how to kill the bunny. Do you know what I mean?
You're like a big bear, man.
Over his shoulder.
Very good in this.
Yeah, and then he decides he doesn't want to act.
I was going to say, oh, thank you for clarifying my next question.
Yeah, just decides that life's not for him.
Oh, do you know what he ended up doing?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I know when they did the history that a couple of them had kind of asked, you know, do you still speak to him? They're like, well, if I see him, I'd say hello, but not really.
Fair enough. I mean, look, if you're... He's come out and he's batting 1,000, so.
Yeah. Vince Vaughn got the role in Jurassic Park 2. They have to send a copy of Swingers to Spielberg so he can approve the use of the Jaws theme music. Spielberg sees it and is like, I need that guy. I need that guy in my film. Gets back to them and asks for the contact info for Vince, and shortly after, he's in Jurassic Park 2.
That's cool. Imagine the confidence. You'd be walking around like you're 10 feet tall, wouldn't you? Spielberg saw me in this, thinks I'm great. There are certain people in whatever industry, whatever life you're about, that you want some respect from, and Spielberg's got to be top 0.1%.
And saying 10 feet tall, I know he's tall anyway. He looks very tall in this film.
Yeah. Considering Favreau had so much to do with the making of this, he's absolutely killed himself. Because he looks fucking tiny.
Yeah.
That scene where when they're in the casino and he gives him the speech about who's a winner, when he lifts his arm up, Favreau's it almost looks like he's on tiptoes to stop it from dislocating.
I keep smiling as I think about different parts of the film that I haven't thought.
It does. It genuinely makes me happy that you like this.
Yeah. Well, I text you, I think, as I was watching it the first time, and I think I text you within about 10 minutes. And then I think I told TK to watch it on the back of that, so.
Yeah, it does make me happy. Well.
As I say, loosely based around their experiences, this is like a proper indie film, not like you see it sometimes and they've got a couple of million to spend. They're using the fridge light to light shots in the apartment. They're not telling clubs that they're going to film in there, and they're going to parties and not telling the people at the party that they're filming there.
The silhouette shots when Favreau comes home, I've always loved. I think if I was making a film, I would rip that off wholly. It's nothing special. Like, it's nothing overly unique. I just love the way it looks, and I would fully rip that off as my little Swingers homage.
They do a lot with what they've got. Even the cameras that they're using is like a documentary-style camera. The film they use is really noisy.
Yeah.
And so they would wrap it in two of Doug Liman's jackets to try and suppress the noise so it wouldn't be overbearing.
It's genuinely just jumpers for goalpost filming, isn't it?
Lyman said he didn't even tell his agent that he was working on this because his agent would have told him to get a real job. Favreau was essentially asking him for advice after he's kind of picked his production company, I think, picks up the script, rights to it. And then he reads it and he's like, okay, what? Yeah, I'll come on board and I'll do it. He'd done some indie things prior. him and Favreau, you can read a bit, they didn't get on too well. I think Favreau obviously is his baby.
Yeah.
And Doug Liman basically told him, I'll direct it, but you have to let me direct it. I'm going to be collaborative with you, but you have to let me do the directing.
I get the final say.
Yeah, and
hard that, isn't it?
They say that Favreau was okay with that when he was doing the acting. It's when they got to post.
Yes. But yeah.
There's that Will Ferrell and Jon Favreau don't get on because of the when things got to in the post room with Elf. And so I think he probably has a very clear vision for what he wants.
He strikes me as that type.
He does what needs to be. But then, yeah, he's the most successful guy in this film. Like, he's maybe the most, like, commercially viable, financially viable director that's around today. Marvel, Star Wars, and Disney. He's done, what, Iron Man, Jungle Book, and The Mandalorian.
Mm. Yeah.
And add Elf into that. The guy makes bank.
He really does. This is probably going to be real disrespectful. I don't know, maybe not actually, because he'd done Elf, but I always forgot that he directed Elf, because I always think he just went away for a while and then came back with Iron Man, basically on the basis that he's mates with Downey Jr.
I may have told you this before, but Old School comes out. They basically want to change Elf into being Frank the Tank at Christmas.
Would you watch that?
I would. But cool. Will Ferrell then was in a weird place. And so Favreau had to be really hard with him. And this is why they don't get on. Supposedly Will Ferrell didn't think he was being funny. And Favreau was having to go really hard on him and tell him, no, do this, do that. And then he got to post and Ferrell still didn't think he was funny. And I think just because of the process of how it went, even though the film went on to be as successful as it was, they always get asked about doing Elf 2, and it seems the beef isn't on Favreau's side, because Favreau's always like, yeah, I'd be open to it. And Will Ferrell, like a day later, is like, yeah, absolutely not. That's not going to happen.
Well, him and Adam McKay are falling out now, mate, so never say never.
Yeah. Something that just tells you about how all these people were in and around the same places. The exterior and interior of Favreau's apartment was the actual building and room in which he lived at the time when the movie was filmed.
Yeah.
The apartment below him, Adam Scott.
That's pretty cool.
He said, Adam Scott says that Favreau took him to the side one day because he saw that he was basically not keeping the place tidy and like a shithole. And he said, the place isn't nice anyway. You're going to really depress yourself if you don't at least keep this place nice. And he said it was like a telling off from his dad, but it really did go a long way. And he started keeping the place tidy and he was a lot better off for it. So Favreau's doing it all at this time.
It seems, I don't know if you put it, I don't know if this says what this says about my judgment of character, but over the years I've come out with that. He seems like a good guy and you've just got a story waiting in the background to slap me back down to earth.
I think Adam Scott says it in the right way, like he.
No, Favreau just seems cool.
I think him and Vince Vaughn were probably perfect for each other at this time.
Yeah,
because Vince Vaughn is probably incredibly easygoing, and Favreau is probably the complete opposite, and they probably balanced each other out well. They met on the set of Rudy, didn't they? And they both did improv and they just clicked. They just started telling each other jokes.
Yeah, I think so.
And Vaughn, basically, they were getting scripts and he says to him, we aren't getting the best stuff that we should be getting. We should do our own. And in the way I would read their friendship, Vince Vaughn saying that is basically saying to Favreau, will you go away and write something?
Yeah.
And then I'll be in it when you've done it.
Yeah. It is very Trent-esque as well.
Yeah.
Like, we're better than this. We need to make it happen.
One of the more important questions here, what was Mike like before he got with his ex-bird? Because they really love this guy. He's not the fun-loving, outgoing guy that they describe.
He was Frank the Tank, basically. Oh. He was absolutely one of the boys, and then it just didn't happen. The other thing is, if like Trent's 24, you've got to imagine Mike's in and around the same age.
Yeah.
So I don't know how sort of tame he was during the relationship, but that relationship is 6 years. It goes on for 6 years.
Yeah.
So essentially, I'm not sure.
I've got a quote from Favreau on the kind of process. He says, "I wrote the screenplay in about a week and a half. The writing process wasn't filled with any sort of turmoil. If you really do the math, it's 10 days, 10 pages a day. It's not like you're chained to the computer. I was just entertaining myself and really enjoying it. I was actually giggling to myself as I was writing it. I just couldn't wait to share it with my friends. And I was just doodling in notebooks and then saying, hey, this could be my big movie." That makes me so happy, the thought of him just chuckling to himself while writing this.
Yeah.
I'll send you, actually, once we've finished this, because it's not something you can include in a podcast. He's kept all the sketches that he did of how he wanted some shots to look and the characters, and it's really good to look back on now.
That's cool. Would you also kindly send me that oral history? Because
hey,
I'd like to read it.
It's actually all part of the same thing. So.
Oh, great.
It's a one-stop shop. It's interesting that Mikey is the lead here, because I think we might actually get tired of him if Trent wasn't there. Like,
correct.
Trent, they give us just enough of where he doesn't get too much, and it's fun to just hang out with all of them.
Yeah, I think
with Mikey just moping for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I think you'll be done with this after about 25 minutes.
Yeah. Favreau did learn how to swing dance for the movie.
I love stuff like that.
It made a lot more sense. He learned how to do it and then told Heather Graham that he could come round to her house and teach her how to swing dance. And so he had a month of going around to Heather Graham's house each evening and teaching her how to dance. It's not quite Affleck going to Fincher and asking for M. Ratajkowski to be cast in Gone Girl because he's seen fantastic acting in the Blurred Lines video. But
it's not. But I was weighing up whether or not it was worth either of us cracking jokes about teaching her to dance.
Did I send you? I don't know if I sent you this. Anthony Mackie, they say he just kept going to the bosses at Marvel and asking when they were going to write in him as Scarlett Johansson's love interest in a Marvel film, just completely seriously. And they had to say, like, it's not going to happen. So I tried.
No, I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe you did send me that. I'm not sure. Oh, no, I think you did.
Yeah, we don't. I was going to have the Favreau conversation here, but we've already done it. The dialogue, the "You're So Money," came from a Spike Lee Michael Jordan commercial.
Okay.
And no one else picked up how golden this was. And Favreau said it just was in his mind, just immediately. Him and Vince Vaughn would just say it to each other on a set of Rudy. And potential investors and studios wanted to get rid of the monies, honeys, and babies from the script. And he was like, well, that's half the script.
Fucking hell. Imagine cutting that out.
Yeah.
How genuinely, if you take their back and forth out of this, this film, like you said it earlier, it's a hanging out film. If you take their back and forth out, this film suddenly becomes very dry.
Well, people that don't know the name of this film would refer to it as the money film or
yeah,
that kind of thing. So crazy. Then that's why those people aren't the creatives.
Yeah.
That conversation that we hear them having at the party about Scorsese's tracking shot in Goodfellas compared to the slow motion in Reservoir Dogs, and then the conversation about Tarantino ripping things off, it's so good anyway. And then the fact that we get those shots later in the film is even better.
Yeah. It is conversations that you and I would sit and have.
Yeah, well, Favreau said he had the idea about doing the Reservoir Dogs shot just like instantaneously, and he just woke the guys up and just made them film several takes at 2 a.m.
Which is odd when you're on such a budget, that because like there's a cost to that. Yeah. I mean, it's cool that he did it and it's cool that they went along with it and got the shot, but when you're on a budget like that, imagine like Doug Liman must be, you'd be fucking ripping your hair out.
I've not watched it for a while, but that pops so well after they've just had the conversation and then you get it. And then to get the Goodfellas one after, and there's a great YouTube video with a side-by-side comparison of the two shots at the same time.
Yeah, I bet that's cool.
It's really good. Even the first time I watched it, as soon as I heard him say, you know, we'll go around back, I thought, are they going to do it?
Yeah.
And then we get it.
How'd the audition go? And then it's just the chat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nothing tops the every time you two. Don't you work.
Even this idea of some like out of luck young guys trying to make it big isn't original, but the way they do it in this film is.
It's fucking like, yeah, like it's relatable. There isn't, I don't think it's just relatable to blokes. I mean, like to young guys and stuff. It's relatable to everyone. Like, fucking everyone's got a dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there isn't a moment where you and your mates, I don't think anyone, like you and your mates, you and your friends haven't sat and you've like, this is what I want to do, or this is what I'd like to be. Like, granted, it may or may not work out, but like, that's why it's relatable.
For sure. And the NHL scene is great. Like, I remember when I discovered a much later version of these games with Langston, and you could fight on there, and that was incredibly fun. But I would compare it to the thrill of just nailing someone on FIFA Street. And my history of mentioning that game constantly does go way back. But even being a kid and losing a game of FIFA, but taking out your frustrations by when you can slide tackle the keeper.
Yeah.
Really good. And the way they integrate this into the scene, it doesn't feel like a bit. It doesn't feel like the game is separate to the dialogue. Like, they sometimes you get it where they just like cross-cut in the screen and then you go back to them chatting. And one of them will put the controller down and they'll just carry on. The way of blending it, I can only imagine how this hit in and around the time when the little kind of nuances about the game that they're talking about, like, can you still fight? No, you can't do that anymore, but you can make them bleed and all these little things.
Yeah, the instant replay, because I imagine that was probably fairly new at that point.
Even down to the characters, they're talking about being like overpowered, and as you say, the Kings are a finesse team, which I know when I used to play the NBA game a lot, and me and Sean would say it about the Spurs as it would have been back in like 2013 or the Pacers in 14, and all of these things are just so on the money. Him making Gretzky's head bleed, it's just really, really good, and it made me want to play these games. They put arcade modes on the NHL games now because these were so big.
I wish they still had fights in this game so I could bitch slap Wayne.
Wait a minute, aren't fighting anymore?
Oh, doesn't that suck?
Why'd they get rid of the fighting? It's the best part of the old version.
I think kids were hitting each other or something, man.
Yeah, but you know what, Mike? You can make their heads bleed on this one.
Make somebody's head bleed? Well, in playoffs.
I'm gonna make Wayne Gretzky's head bleed for super fan number 99 over here.
Oh, well, that's quite cool.
Yeah. And you get the scene, maybe if we were doing Trent being an asshole again, they do shout some things at the delivery driver, including asking if he's cute to wind up Mikey, but I guess we let it slide for the most part.
Yeah.
The other guys, we've mentioned Sue. Sue's fun. Rob is my guy in this.
Yeah.
I watched Office Space recently and really loved it.
Never seen it, mate.
It's Ron Livingston as the main character. But it's like an easy like hour and 20 minutes, I think it is, about a guy who hates his job and...
Office Space, the one with Aniston in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you seen it?
No.
Oh, basically he just wakes up one day and decides he's going to do what he wants when he goes to work. And he's got two other guys that hate their jobs. And it's, you know, just playing. You've got the staff party, the meetings with the bosses. It's just perfect the whole way through.
Yeah.
Really, really easy watch.
I always get confused. It's with, it might be Blank or Blank. The one with Michael Douglas where he decides that he basically is just going to go postal, but in a quite a funny way.
Well, I always do the tweet when I'm watching a film, and I tweeted out that I was watching Office Space, and I had like three or four people message me, like, have you seen this before? I love that film. And that filled me with encouragement after about 2 minutes of the film. And yeah, it really did deliver. Harper messaged me, said, I have to watch that now. And I think he stuck it straight on because he said how much he liked it. Very, very good. I think that might be on Prime as well. But you never, the way they shuffle things on and off Prime,
Quick with it.
Yeah, Rob, he's just throwing out gold in this. He's you can't do anything to make her want to come back. You can only do stuff to make her not hat maker not want to come back. At first you'll pretend to forget about her, but eventually you'll really forget about her.
Yeah, he's very scenes, like, he's great in the opening.
Yeah, their scenes make the Trent scenes better, as he's like the leveler.
Yeah, it makes him more palatable, because as much as we love Trent, if it was 96 minutes of that, I think it would kill you. It's American Pie, we've already said it. American Pie do the exact same thing with Stifler. You love Stifler for all the reasons that he is. But if he's in every single scene at
it's
full
where
tilt,
the later ones go wrong. When the spin-offs, like American Pie, like, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
Band Camp, and, you know, where the Stifler main character.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You just need the sort of a lightning touch in there, don't you?
Yeah, they made him audition for this as well, and he said he just read the pep talk for the director, and he was like, yeah, I guess you'll do. And he was on.
That's fine. Sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah. He said none of them were that excited when they found out they had the roles, because they knew that so much could still go wrong, and it didn't really feel like what they thought it would feel like.
Mm.
But then down the line, this is the film that people still talk about more than any others they've done. So,
yeah, I imagine I get it. Like, because, you know, going into a production like that, I imagine, you know, yeah, this might not happen or something, and then it's what goes from there. But looking back on it, I imagine it is mint.
Yeah, alternatively, Trent's advice, you know, I don't want you to be the guy in the PG-13 movie that everyone's really hoping makes it happen. There must be a compilation on YouTube with just all of his lines that's probably about 10 minutes long and is just perfect.
Probably, after some experiences that I had Googling Swingers last night, I'm not sure I want to start.
Yeah, you got to put 1996 in there or IMDb or something.
Yeah. I made that mistake twice.
Rob and Mikey playing golf, where he just wants a pat on the back for not mentioning his girlfriend.
Mm.
And Rob yelling, "Get there!" as his putt that just isn't even close made me laugh.
Yeah. It's complimentary. That's what you're supposed to do.
Modeling his mini, like, Trent look. Doug Liman says when he read the script, this was a film about bromance more than Mikey getting his friend back, his girlfriend back, and he said the powerful friendship of Trent and Mikey, and then Sue kind of trying to bustle in.
Yeah, that's always been the point in case for me. It's a film about mates. It's not like it's not inconsequential because it drives the story, but it's sort of like incidental.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like Sue's trying to bustle in too much for me. I'm not against Sue in this film.
I don't like it when he starts going in on my boy Mikey. But
then one of my favourite bits in the film that I thought was so true in so many cases is when he apologises and Mikey says, "I needed that kick in the ass. We're better friends for it." And I wrote it down straight away. I thought, perfect.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm still not a fan of him starting to go in on it, though, whether or not the life lessons received.
Mikey also said, when he gets the gun out, "Didn't you see Boys in the Hood? Now one of us is going to get shot." it's so good. A little like reference like that. Some of the cringe in this, we've mentioned some of the jokes that Mikey sends. That, like, 10-minute slot of him speaking to Nikki at the bar, to her saying how she recognises him, to him leaving the voice notes immediately after leaving. It's just so good. Him saying,
did you just refer to them as voice notes?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Okay.
Him ending it with, "It's what I'm going through, all right. Maybe we just take some time off from each other," is phenomenal.
Hey, Nikki. you just getting up? Or just getting in, sorry? Or how much of that did you hear? Trying to finish with any sort of star. You just put the phone down, don't you, and go, "Well, you know, I know I'm cooked now."
Yeah.
One way or another.
The conversation when they're in the bar, where they're talking about how long they should wait to call, and Trent and Sue are on entirely the same page, where they're finishing each other's sentences. So Mikey says, Well, how about if I wait 6 weeks to call? I could tell her I found her number while I was cleaning up my wallet. I can't remember where we met. I can ask her what she looks like. And then I'll ask if we fucked. Would that be money? It's just...
I love the moments where money is turned round as a negative.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. Like, would that be money? It's such a superb question.
Everyone has kind of words like that they've used at times there where it means two different things, but also everyone understands the context in however it's being used. Sick yeah. was a great one in like 2014 or whatever it would have been. Yeah. That sick and that sick meant entirely different things.
Correct, yeah.
The ending with Heather Graham in there and Mikey, when he finally puts it all together and they keep cutting back to Trent and he's like crying at how happy he is. And Sue is like nudging the girl that's with him and pointing at Mikey and making sure she knows how good it is.
For the first 3 minutes of that, they just completely bomb her off. And she does, considering she's got no dialogue, and they've obviously just said, sort of facial expressions. She's great because every time it cuts back to her, she looks a little bit more bored, a little bit more fucked off, and she's so on and so forth.
She's trying to kiss Sue at one stage and he points in at Mikey. No, that's my guy.
Yeah. And at one point when she like leans in, Trent just like doesn't go to give her a shot, just essentially bangs a shot glass in her face, but like at like forehead level.
Yeah, it's so good. Gets the number, plays it cool, and then him waiting for the days, and then she calls first. It's the perfect kind of end to his
It's very cute, as is the, like, when she's like, oh, if I ask someone to dance. We've seen it done before, but it's nice.
Classic film stuff.
Yeah.
Even, what did you think of, like, I just assumed they were going to kiss when they left the club.
Mm-hmm.
Was it important for them to, him to turn away his ex first to then decide he wanted something new rather than it? Do you think maybe he would have been acting in lust or whatever it would have been there?
If he does it, so if he does it, so they kiss or kiss or shags or whatever the case might be, and then he does it, there feels almost like an element of guilt to it. Whereas at least when he does it in the way he does it in the film, it's read as a pure motive.
Yeah, it's almost perfectly done. The end, I understand why they're blowing it up in Trent's face afterwards where he's doing the baby stuff.
Mm. I'd forgotten that point when I watched this last night.
Yeah, that's what I meant with them kind of ridiculing him. I thought that was how I took it the first way around. But, you know, this time, I don't know how much of a...
I always read it as it's more, because obviously Mike's on about, oh, Joe, I'm happy, I'm not going to fail it. I always take it as it's done to emphasise Mikey's win rather than give Trent an out.
Well, because the first time I watched it, Mikey's kind of pouring his heart out and he's so proud of himself, and Trent cuts him off to say about the lady looking at him. And that's where I was a bit, what are they trying to do here? But I think they're just showing that's kind of him. They're probably bored by Mikey at this stage. It's not a big deal for them like it is for him.
Mm. And then, no, I get that, yeah.
I think what's important is I don't think at any point in the film we're expecting that Mikey would turn into Trent 2, that he would ever pick up on the main basis of what Trent is doing, and he would the kind of happy ending would be he goes in and he's, you know, he treats a cocktail waitress mean to keep him keen and that.
Yeah.
It's just that he was true to himself and that works for him in the end.
Yeah.
Heather Graham, I know they got a great time in this. The little bit of chemistry that her and Mikey have in the, what, less than 10 minutes they're on screen, it's very good.
I think, I'm sure... if I've never referenced this before, I'd be quite surprised, but I think she's great. I think she's fantastic in everything I see her in.
Yeah, I'd forgotten it was her in The Hangover until you said it earlier, and then it clicked. Like, obviously, that's her in The Hangover.
Yeah. She's... I'm not sure. There's I'm trying to find a way of A, not being wildly offensive, and B, not being stupid. Somehow, for a woman that looks like that, and maybe it's the Jennifer Lawrence thing, somehow for a woman that looks like that, there's a girl next door thing to it, which makes absolutely no sense because she's stunning. But there is something there in any film that I've seen her in.
I got what you were saying. It's all good. Mm. Let's get on to the awards to close things out here. First question, MVP. Got to be Trent, hasn't it?
Correct.
I'll ask you what I referenced at the start of the show. Who would you compare yourself to in this film?
I'd be closer to Mike than Trent, mate.
I certainly agree with that. Are we chucking any other character in?
Thanks, mate.
I think of myself as a nice... I don't think there's anything wrong with being a Mikey.
Brilliant. Thank you. To be honest, that was just out of those two, if you're throwing anyone else in, I'm probably a Rob.
Yeah, that's the safest bet. I identify with a lot of things with Mikey. A lot of the things that he gets worked out up about outside of his missing his ex-girlfriend, just the organization, the like, well, we were supposed to be there at this time. Why are we still not there at this time? A lot of things he does, the awkwardness, the humor. I'd probably have to go with Mikey. I'd like to think of myself. I've got a bit of Rob in there. Not sure I've got much Sue in me, but you know, chuck some in if you really need to. I'd like a Trent there in small doses, but
I don't think I've got
Trent.
That. No. Yeah, I'll probably there's a tiny bit.
Vince Vaughn, star of the film?
Yes.
Best moment / scene is tough here because I would separate it really into just three parts.
If you're separating into three...
I'm not sure how you do it.
No, that's fine. Lorraine and Mikey. I do actually love that. I think it's great. Casino monologue. And as much as I was saying that I was dogging Sue, the Mikey Sue Trent.
What are we dogging Sue, man? Harsh.
No, I said I didn't like him when he's at my boy. don't say it.
Any of that first Vegas sequence I can go with. The NHL sequence is great. But if I had to really narrow it down, probably when they first get to the casino.
Yes.
I would say.
Yeah. The casino monologue, which I know is not a monologue, but Mikey could actually just be that film poster, that film cut out at that point.
So you get to Vegas, you hand your money over and you get given three chips back. Do you have... surely you have to put your pride to the side there and say, yeah, I'll take these to a different table.
Correct.
Because I'm not... Really, I've never home after one hand.
I've never got to the point where they've changed chips, but I have definitely walked over to a pack table more than once. Excuse me, what's the minimum bet? It is X. No, thank you.
Do you double down on 11?
Yeah, these people around me are all strangers. I have no care for your opinion. I've done that many a time, mate. I'm not chucking down £5 minimum bet on a number on the roulette table. No. So I look brave in front of strangers. No, thank you.
Best quote. There's so many. I think you're so money and you don't even know it. It probably has to be the one, but my Fredo one would be is the standout for me. Trent, there's nothing wrong with letting girls know that you're money and you want a party. Why did it have to be Goofy? Why couldn't it be Mickey? Mickey's an icon.
The one I love is the Age of Enlightenment as she just strolls past me and says, yeah, thanks a lot, Voltaire.
Yeah. Let me think of American Pie 3 with Finch where he keeps quoting Voltaire.
Mm. You're so money and you don't know it. I mean, just that you're money or that's money, that they are, I know it's a cop-out, but that's what people think. You've already said it. It's what people think of when they think of this film.
Yeah, I might try and sneak honey babies into my vocabulary, but not sure I'll get away with it.
Yeah. Okay, you go for it.
If I tried it on, I don't know if you saw, I shared yesterday that Jessica Alba video that she put on Instagram, Rock My World. If I tweeted out Jessica Alba is the goat honey baby, I think I'd have been added or probably blocked by at least 6 people, added by probably 7 more. Not that guy.
Maybe.
Unless you saw the video and maybe you'd have understood.
I haven't seen the video, I'll be honest.
Timeless. The undisputed goat for me, but that's a conversation for another day.
Okay.
Would you rather add Brendan Fraser, Miles Teller, or Bill Murray to this movie?
Is it 94? Is it them in 96 or is it them now?
I'll let you be creative.
Okay. Them in 96. Just chuck a young Miles Teller in. Let's see what chaos just ensues. Okay. I don't know. Maybe he's like the waitress's kid and there's a scene with Trent and the kid whilst Mikey's like fucking crying because his ex-missus has left him. And if it's their age now, I think Brendan Fraser would be the pick, but just bang Bill Murray in. You would have 5 minutes of Bill Murray in the casino, just like shooting gun fingers, knocking back whiskies and chatting up the two twins.
What if he's the dealer that's giving the funny looks?
No, I get it. Yeah.
Give me a young Brendan Fraser in there as Sue, you know?
Yours is the sensible and the correct choice because he would have knocked that out of the park. But I was thinking about it when you sent me the questions. I was thinking about, do you mean then or now? And then the thought of Miles Teller playing a little kid running around having a chat with Trent just made me crack up.
I saw when I was Googling this that John Hamm was running about with this lot at the time. Which,
yeah.
Imagine him in this. Your man Sue doesn't really want to be in there. Get some long hair on John Hamm.
John Hamm's probably glad he didn't get the nod, considering.
Would you rather add Emma Stone, Molly Ringwald, or Julianne Moore to this movie? Complete coincidence, they're all redheads.
Okay.
Definitely wasn't when I was trying to think of 3 people to group in together. And I went with 3 generations.
I would like to see Julianne Moore in this.
I've gone for Emma Stone as with Heather Graham. Felt an easy one.
Yeah, but I wanted to keep Heather Graham. Maybe Dina Martin, give me Julianne Moore instead.
I've been trying to find more roles for Molly Ringwald since we did Breakfast Club, but she don't jump off the page.
Yeah, no, that's probably why she was so typecast in the 80s, no?
Yeah. 16 Candles would be an interesting pod to do, but yeah.
Never seen it.
You'd have some interesting takeaways for sure.
Okay. The only thing I know about 16 Candles is the scene that they show in Harold and Kumar.
Yeah. If you had to make a spin-off movie about a side character from this film, who would it be about? I've got a niche pick here.
Give me the old boy in the casino who's just battering hundreds off. I honestly don't know.
I've got Sue trying to rise up the ranks and get good at NHL.
What, just training montages?
Yeah, there were people like that, weren't there? There were people who tell you how good they were playing like at home on their own, and then you get in a group and they just get slapped by everyone.
Yeah.
Sue's unfortunately that guy.
Yeah, I work it worse. He then just gets turned over by Trent as well.
Yeah.
That's about 5 minutes for you, man.
I don't know if you understood the next question or not.
I don't know.
In the gift shop based around this film, what's the highest selling item? So the idea is Disney World or whatever have a swingers ride when you come out. What merch is the first thing being sold?
Okay.
I usually pride myself on my answers for this.
Okay. Maybe I thought I understood the question.
I've got Favreau's tie with the dice on it from when they get to Vegas.
Yeah, so I scaled back. Because my actual answer is I'd just love to buy Trent's suit, but I feel that's not a gift shop item.
It fits in with, I've been more egregious than that before.
Okay. I was trying to think if it's going to be something smaller, actual gift shop esque. You're right. Yeah, I did misunderstand the question.
A hairpiece like Vince in that film.
Yeah. Give me. I'll take the delivery driver's cap from Pink John's.
Nice. And then this one is. I'm not sure I can get an answer for this one, but would this be better being remade as a Black Mirror episode, an addition to the MCU, or The Nice Guys 2?
Give it up. You can definitely get an answer. Give me The Nice Guys 2. Imagine these two trying to sell fucking crime.
So that was my answer. It just didn't fit as easily as the previous ones did. Primal Fear was straight in as a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Give me Trent and Mikey. They're on their way back from Vegas. Some woman gets tossed out of the car dead. Mikey becomes obsessed with it. They rope him in. Lorraine pops around. She's suddenly on the case as well. Next thing you know, there's people with guns in their faces. Trent saying, this ain't money.
Do you know, I liked Made less having seen this again. Because I know what we could have got.
Yeah, I think that was everyone's problem, right?
Yeah. Do you think Favreau sees the Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson link up and gets a bit jealous?
Maybe until he opens his wallet or looks at that banking app and he's like, hey, look, here's what it is.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, well, I think that just about brings us to an end here. I've got TK back on with me next week. We're doing Godfather Part 3.
Great film.
Adios.